And welcome back to the podcast. This is a bit of a different setup, but welcome back to Dream Girl. I'm Sheen, your host. And today we're joined by the celebrity himself behind...
Celebrity.
He won't even let me finish the intro. The celebrity behind the Muslim page, Amir.
Assalamu alaikum. Thanks for having me. Celebrity is a big word because I'm not a celebrity. I'm just behind the scenes and I'm a journalist.
You're a journalist.
Yes.
Let's start there. Okay, Amir, welcome to the channel, first of all.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to have met you here in Doha.
I know.
It's been so much fun.
We kind of like bonded over the trip and we became besties. He will deny it, but...
Yeah. No, I didn't deny it. I was like, wow, we're besties. And we started off on the wrong foot after you dissed my shirt.
But and you called me ugly.
I didn't call you ugly. I was just...
He made a comment about my outfit that made me feel a certain kind of way. But anyway... Let's not get into that. So, Amir, give us a little introduction.
Okay, so Assalamu alaikum. My name is Amir. I'm the founder and editor-in-chief of Muslim. We're the largest media publication and news outlet covering news affecting the Muslim community across the entire world. So it can be something as small as like hate crimes locally, on a local level, all the way to like international politics and news that's affecting Muslims across the world.
And we're currently in Doha, so yes. I guess the podcast is international now.
Oh, mashallah. Wait, is this the first time outside of Dubai to be filmed? Oh, I thought it was special.
It started in the UK, right?
Am I the first American?
No.
Am I the first Palestinian?
No.
Damn, I got first nothing. Am I the first Muslim?
No, please. We've had a lot of Palestinians, so I'm very excited. Also, when I said introduce yourself, you didn't mention you're Palestinian.
Oh yeah, I'm 26 years old. I'm Palestinian, born in New Jersey. My entire family lineage is Palestinian, and then I was the first one displaced and born in the U.S., so I'm first generation American.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's address the elephant in the room, right? What is it like being a Palestinian Muslim in the U.S. at the moment?
Well, it's hard, for sure. It's like walking on eggshells every single day. It's kind of like you have a thorn on your neck at all times. Being vocal about Palestine costs you jobs, it costs you opportunities, it costs you friendships. So it's literally like very difficult to even just like breathe, but what I really appreciate is a lot of like allies and people who are advocating for Palestine that is making it easier for Palestinians. So like they're speaking on behalf of us. So there's like organizations like Jewish Voices for Peace that are like, we're Jewish, so we stand for Palestine because Palestinians, when we are vocal about Palestine, we get like accused as anti-Semitic. We get like called all these like different things. But when like Jewish advocates and activists are like, no, like this is a genocide, then they are taking kind of like the dodge for us and protecting us.
Mm. So how long has Muslim been active now?
We turned 5 in February.
Mashallah, so congratulations.
Thank you. I launched it February 15, 2019, the day after Valentine's Day.
Oh, wow. So what sparked it?
Oh my God. Well, to be honest, like I went to school for journalism. And when I went to school for journalism in 2016, Trump got elected. And immediately it was like gloom because the Muslim travel ban was implemented. I had roommates that were affected by it. And in journalism class, every single day we had to write like articles or cover like some story and bring it to class. And while everyone was writing about like Zendaya's latest red carpet look or Beyonce's latest album, I found myself like writing about updates of the Muslim travel ban and how like Yemenis and everybody was like affected by this. I did an investigative report at my university about how college students in particular were affected by the Muslim travel ban. And it was like a whole big report. And then my professor was like, okay, like this is really worthy of being published online. Which publication? Because like he had access to all these like different like outlets. And I was like, you know, I want my audience to be Muslims to read this article because I want Muslims to read this article about the travel ban and be aware that universities and colleges are not on your side to help you if you're impacted by the travel ban. So then I started doing research. I was like, okay, let me look for a Muslim media publication or news outlet. And I couldn't find any. I couldn't find any like Muslim news outlets that strictly had a Muslim audience that covered Muslim news. To have the story published. And since then, it was like tunnel vision. I was like, wow, I think there's a need for this space to have Muslim stories told in a centralized area, like a on a mainstream level. And I was already covering Muslim news stories because that's just what I was gravitated towards. And that's how Muslim came to existence, alhamdulillah.
And when was the first time you felt like, okay, this is actually picking up now?
Alhamdulillah, the first week I launched Muslim, it started as a newsletter, actually. Every Friday, I would take the top headlines of Muslim news in the week and summarize them. And I called it the Post-Jummah Digest. Mm. So it was a newsletter that like summarized it. And I went to everybody and I was like, because I was really active on campus and locally and all the Muslim organizations and Islamic centers. So I was like, you got to follow my newsletter, follow my newsletter, follow my newsletter. And then I started posting like the news on social media. And I guess because it was so fresh, it was graphics. And I have experience in social media and graphic design. Seeing Muslim news like posted in that way was just so new. What started locally was just like, everyone started following locally, and then they were sharing it to their networks. And then within like the first 2 weeks, I had 3,000 followers.
Oh, wow.
And so immediately it was just like, I was like, oh my God, there's something here. Alhamdulillah. And so it was like a snowball effect ever since. It's on my phone.
Disruption as usual.
It's like breaking news story, really like happening
oh,
right now.
Breaking news.
Do you want to mute it? I'm sorry. Just like hit the button on the side.
I know how an iPhone works.
It's the new one. You just hit the button. You don't do the switch.
Yeah, you know what? You were so right. You kept telling me that when it turns on and the professional Amir comes out,
yeah.
It's true. And right now you broke out of character again. You need to let that out. I don't want the boring Amir, please.
I rarely do interviews. That's why it's like...
You barely do interviews, weren't you on GQ and...
Yeah, grazie, alhamdulillah. Those were like the first interviews I've done and I've never done anything since. Oh, I did time recently in Ramadan, alhamdulillah.
You're doing Al Jazeera tomorrow.
Oh yeah, I was on Al Jazeera. But it was more of me, like they bring me on to commentate and not ask about me.
Mm. Have you been on a podcast before? Am I your first podcast?
No, you're not. I just don't
first
remember.
First non-American one?
No, I did Putri's, remember? Indonesia. I was just telling you. I feel like I was on a podcast before. And I was like, oh, Putri.
We were talking about this earlier, right? So for you, you feel like the it factor is that you are addressing the younger generations, the younger Muslim generation, and we are bringing them the news and trying to rally everyone together. Even now, for what we are here for in Qatar, is all about stronger together, right? Mm. We bring Muslims together to do something better for the world.
Right.
Why do you think there's still a need to bring us together? Why are we not together yet?
Yeah, that's very valid. I just feel like we're not as connected, or there's no outlets for us to be connected to one another. And that's an honest... So here's the thing. When I was inspired to launch Muslim, I was like, immediately, let me do research on when, like, to launch Muslim. So I was like, let me study past case studies of like Muslim outlets that did exist. And actually, the first Muslim news outlet in the US was created by Malcolm X. And it was called Muhammad Speaks. And it played a very pivotal role because during the civil rights movement in the United States, they used Muhammad Speaks as the newsletter to stay informed on all the news impacting Black Americans at the time. So, like, a story that I love sharing is, like, when Muhammad Ali said, oh, I'm not going to go and get drafted to Vietnam War because I'm Muslim. And what did they do to me in Vietnam? I'm not going to go kill innocent people. He was put into trial. And when he was put on trial, Muhammad Speaks, like, published about it. And the circulation of Muhammad Speaks led to 30,000 people going outside of the trial to protest and boycott for Muhammad Ali for his charges to be dropped. Because it was a big deal that he said no to being drafted to war. But that's how connected everyone was. Everyone was connected to this newspaper to stay informed on like news about... They were covering news about Palestine, about Muslim news, indigenous news, Black American news. And I was reflective of that. And I went to Boston to study archives of Muhammad Speaks just so I could see like how they, like, you know, what were they publishing and how it was so successful because they had a circulation of 2 million. This paper, like newspaper, it was so radical, this newspaper. And it was a Muslim newspaper. And it played a pivotal role in civil rights. And it made me realize, I was like, Muhammad Speaks played a pivotal role in connecting the Ummah, because the Ummah was being informed on news and stories that was affecting their communities and their identity. And it shut down after the Nation of Islam disbanded and stuff like that. It no longer is in existence, but there's nothing that connects us. So going back to, like, why is there a need for spaces for us to connect is because when we're connected, we're so strong. Because when I launched Muslim, it's a tool for us to be connected and informed on all things affecting us, whether it's, like, Muslims in Palestine, Muslims in Sudan, Muslims in China that are affected by, like, genocides or crises. When a Muslim is informed on harm that's affecting our community, even if it's in China or Sudan, we feel like, oh, my God, we have to do something. Like there's a hadith, and I'm going to butcher it. It's like our ummah is one body. So if, like, one body is harmed, mm-hmm. then, like, we're all affected.
We feel the pain, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we lack that. And I sincerely believe that media and news plays a role in connecting and uniting us. So I feel like across the board, collectively, the Muslim community is, like, they feel disconnected. And I think it's because the lack of, like, spaces, platforms, there's a lot of successful Muslims doing cool things in their own, like, spaces. There's just no outlets or things that can connect us so that they can grow and build together. Because you have awesome Muslims that are doing things in, like, France, and then you have awesome Muslims that are doing things in the U.S. and Dubai. And it's just, like, we don't know about each other because there's no spaces that's collectively bringing us together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when we share, like, our knowledges, we're going to take over the world.
Yeah, but honestly, even, like, this past few days, right, being around, like, when we met, there were all of our friends around. And I think it's been really cool to see that. I don't know how to explain this, but I feel like usually, especially me, I mean, for you, it's a bit different, right? Because as a creator, you're specifically, as a creator and a journalist, you are in that arena of Muslims, right?
Right.
But for us, usually you feel like despite being Muslim, you are there. So then it feels great to know that now we can be in a space where being Muslim is also at the forefront of you and what you bring, because the way you think, the experience you have, and being able to come together to do something is incredible. So I think that's great.
We have a lot to offer to the world. And I always use the analogy of, like, the Muslim community is a puzzle. And everyone has a piece to play. And so I know my piece and my role in this puzzle of the Muslim community is news and media. And so I know my role is I make Muslim news viral. I bring attention to Muslim stories. I get eyes on things that don't usually have eyes or attention. But then you have people that are, like, doing things with that virality, right? So I make a Muslim story viral. Let's say the earthquakes in Turkey, right? It was so pivotal because in the U.S., the Super Bowl was going on, so everyone cared about Rihanna's baby bump. They didn't care about Turkey going under. So they're so dependent on Muslim because we're the ones keeping updates. I was on the grounds in Turkey covering. And then the humanitarian orgs depended on that so then they could, like, use the virality of the earthquakes and the posts and the engagement that we're doing so they could push for donations for people to, like, you know, donate in humanitarian org. And then same with, like, causes. If we're publishing about a hate crime, you have got grassroots organizations that are, like, trying to push for legislation. They depend on the virality so they could do their work. Even if you're an athlete, and then there's, like, a post that has viral on, like, a story where it's like, oh, headscarves are banned in, like, a football game or, like, a soccer game. Athletes depend on that virality so then inside they could, like, push and advocate for themselves. So, like, it's everybody has a piece to play in their own sphere. So, like, it's never, like, a discredit. People always come up to me and they're like, oh, I wish I could do more for X, Y, and Z for this community. And I'm like, well, what are your skill sets? Because, like, in that skill sets, and what are your, like, your current work, your occupation? Because in there you can insert yourself to, like, do something for a cause or for the community. You just got to figure that out. I'm doing my role in media, but people are doing their roles in, like, if they're a lawyer or if they're, like, an athlete, if they're an influencer. Like, everyone has a piece in this big puzzle.
Yeah, I like that because I think sometimes we get carried away thinking that the best way to help is humanitarian work.
Yeah.
But whatever we're doing, as you said, whichever path we're on, we can still make a difference. But okay, I'm going to ask you something else now. Okay, a bit more juicy. But the thing is, you know, as a Muslim who's a creator, and we've talked about this, you even agreed with me on this, where sometimes, you know, like, the Muslim audience can be the... not the most kind audience, you know, when they come for you. And I feel like we're always under scrutiny. And that puts a lot of people off from trying to speak about or speak for Muslims as a group, right? Yeah. So how do you tackle that?
Well, I can never escape it. I'm probably not the best person to answer even this question because my audience, it's kind of never enough. There's because the thing is, I play this crucial role in the Muslim community that I have to stay informed on everything that affects the Muslim community because I have that like role. So at times, people stop me, even if I go to like public events, and they're like, you're not posting enough for Syria. You're not posting enough for Sudan. You're not posting enough. And I'm like, honestly, like, that's valid. Like, I could be posting more. Even though I do post about all those subjects, it's just not enough to the caliber that they think that is appropriate. And if I'm a servant for the community, that feedback is something that I need to be receptive towards. So I always, like, it's not that I push back, but I'm a one-man team. So when I published all this news, it's literally just all me. You literally saw me at the cafe doing the post.
Yeah, on Canva. Yeah.
I was like, wait, give me 1 second. Let me da-da-da-da. Okay, we could go.
Even in my workshop, you were in my workshop and you were on Canva.
I did two posts in your workshop. Two posts. And then do breaking news stories. Like da-da-da. And then I had like an audience of people watching my screen.
And people like, are posting you on this story, being like, oh, he's working all the time.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you use Canva? I'm like, stop, that's so embarrassing. I'm a Photoshop guy, but yeah, I'm using Canva. So it's not that I push back, but I'm a one-man team, so I will miss the mark on staying informed on subjects all the time. So when people have that feedback, I'm like, you know what? Like, you can come and join and volunteer and help me so, like, I can have that information and make it into a post. Yeah. And most of the time, they don't want to do it. So, I learned to accept feedback from people that are doing actual work in the community.
You got it.
When you get feedback from people that are just like not doing anything beneficial, it's kind of like projection on their part, and they don't really understand the grand scope of things. Whereas like if it's like someone like you or someone like Yusuf or someone like Nader, I feel like if they come to me with like feedback, I will be like, wow, I'm so receptive for this because they're in that same sphere and space of the industry.
Okay, that's fair enough. Did they ever come for you personally?
Oh my God, I got doxxed. I had my address leaked, my social security number. I'm not even being kidding. I had to go in hiding one time.
Like, oh my God.
Went to the police. Like, it was so bad. Yeah.
But that doesn't stop you. I guess that's the life of a journalist.
Well, I mean, it's not even the life of a journalist. It's like the life of doing things for the Muslim community. I signed up for this. You have to have thick skin because like at times I would have interns, right, who would be like, oh, I want to put my face on Muslim. I'm ready to do reels. I'm like, look, like I'm giving you a heads up. Like, the comments are going to be critical about every small thing. There's this one girl that doesn't wear a hijab, right? She's like, I want to do like Instagram
I told reels. You I was going to host. And you were like,
And like, look.
How do I tell her?
She was like, I don't care. I was like, you don't wear the hijab. My audience is going to be critical of you not wearing hijab. And she was like, I don't care. I can handle it. No, we posted her. And she did like a Muslim news breakdown. And she was like, oh my God, I got so much like hate and DMs. And da-da-da. I was like, I gave you a warning, you know? And then that was something that just kept on reoccurring, keep on being brought up, like, oh my God, I can't believe I got that one comment. I can't believe I got that one message. But I was like, in my mind, I'm like, I get thousands of those every single day. I get those comments directed to me every single day, but like, I kind of just compartmentalize it because I know like the work I'm doing is much greater and it doesn't affect me. I just learned to have thick skin and, you know, just keep on moving. But to some people that are like at a like lower level of exposure to that type of criticism or feedback or comments and engagement, they're not used to like having like 3 hate comments, but then let alone like 100 hate comments at once, like it overwhelms people. So, yeah.
But how were you always like this to like let things, you know, kind of like roll off?
It was always in my nature, I guess, because I never like really like fight back. Well, I mean.
You've only been fighting me this whole week.
I like everybody. Like
I've seen you fight people.
If like that organizes, like, I'm fighting everybody.
I don't fight anybody.
It's not that I don't fight back. It's more so of like when people like send me hate or like even influencers, they make exposés or like videos about me or like they try to like instigate fights with me to get engagement, like an engagement bait and stuff like that. I don't entertain any of it. So I think that's also like the thing. People, I have like this mystique about me and Muslim online because people would like try, like these big influencers or creators would try to like make like a rumor or like try to make like a post to like expose me for something that's not true. And then because I don't like bite the bait, they like people are like, oh my god, so like is this like true or like oh my god, like what's going on? Why aren't they talking about, you know? So I don't know. I don't fight back in that sense. Like online, like if people are trying to like come after me or like stuff like that.
You choose your battles basically online.
I don't even choose battles. I just don't do battles online. Like, in person, it's a different story. If an organizer doesn't have Palestinian or Lebanese speakers during this time, I'm going to say something. And there's an event going on in Doha right now. Like, don't got neither of those.
There we go. Getting me canceled as well now.
You looked and you was ready to fight the organizer too, no?
Oh my God. That's what Amir does. Just gets us to fight. You just rile
up. It's a Palestinian in me. I can't control it.
Okay.
I got a dog. Oh.
Don't say that.
I got a dog in me. That's what we say in Jersey.
Is that what you say?
Yeah, I got the dog in me. I like love how Sami Hamdi was like, Amir taught me. He's from Jersey. I was like, yeah, Jersey representation.
I knew. I was like, oh, wow, that's a very niche reference.
Yeah. Because the thing is, like, the thing about me... In, like, the Muslim space, I am so, like, loud about, I'm from New Jersey. Mm. I'm not from New York. I'm from New Jersey. Mm. And so that's the thing. That's why it's so funny when he said it in his speech. He's like, oh, so I was in New Jersey. The mayor taught me. Oh, so I'm here from New Jersey. So
he said it, like, three times.
I was like, that's right. I'm here from Jersey. Not I'm here from Muslim. I'm here from Jersey. Shout out Sami Hamdi. He's a really good speaker.
We love Sami Hamdi.
Yeah, he's, you know, he has a really good social presence too, mashallah.
Yeah.
You should have him on the pod.
I should. I really should. But I think he's also really good at like capturing your attention. He didn't lose me.
Yeah.
Even though he talked for a very long time.
I know, but you stay every minute.
You listen.
Yeah.
But you know, he said what his trick is, right? So after every 3 minutes, you need to either say something funny or something impactful.
Oh, he said that?
Yeah. Oh. You clearly were listening very attentive.
I was listening to, is he saying my name again? Because that's what
that's what you were screaming for. But you know how he tells a joke every now and then. Mm. That's when he realizes he's losing the audience. Then he catches them again.
That's funny.
That's pretty smart. Yeah, that's pretty smart.
He loves watching comedians too.
You know, every day you keep an eye on the news. And the news is very depressing at the moment.
It's always depressing.
Yeah. But especially now, it's even more depressing, right?
Yeah.
How do you, like, then switch off from that? Can you even switch off? How do you protect your mental health with that?
Oh, that, I get asked that all the time. And people are always like, Amir, are you in therapy? Are you like, I had this incident that happened 2 months ago where a really good friend of mine was killed in the West Bank. And she's an American citizen. And I had to help facilitate the news coverage of that. It was the first time that I was covering like news of like something that is global, international news is that I'm like connected to. And that was the first time where I was like, oh my God, like I had this connection to. And I didn't process it fully at the time. But the thing was immediately, right? Because I get a call from like her best friend, who's like her sister, who was like, Amir, like Ashnoor was just like murdered. They're posting her photo online, the bloody videos and her passport. We don't know what to do. We don't know what to do. And I was like, look, what we need right now, I'm going to connect you to this organization, CARE, to give you legal counsel. They're going to give you a press conference. But what I need right now, most importantly, is a photo of her, of Ashnoor. I don't know. I was like, look, I need it within the next 5 minutes for when we make the post, you know? She sent me this photo, and it's like the keffiyeh and the hat. And I go to this Slack channel with all these other journalists from like Middle East Eye, Al Jazeera, and stuff like that. I was like, hey guys, like this is directly from the family, breaking news. If you're covering the story, use this photo. And then everyone would just like thumbs up it. And I posted the news, and then all of a sudden the feed was just like flooded with like this photo. So it like drowned out like the videos and the graphic videos and footage. And it was kind of like taking control of her narrative. Because I immediately, instead of just being like hit by like the emotions of like, okay, my friend just got killed. Yeah. I was like, time is up the essence, media-wise. It was like work immediately. And it was so crazy because I went straight to her profile because I was like, there's no way. I just spoke to her yesterday. So then I went on her profile and her close friend just updated 2 hours ago, Juma Mubarak. So I like screenshotted it. I was like, wow, like 2 hours ago she was alive. She posted on her close friends, Juma Mubarak, and now she's dead. So it was like something that I had connected to, but because I am so into Muslim for the past 5 years, because like not even just like well, like after October 7th, like in 2021 when Sheikh Jarrah and all the escalations back in 2021, like I was on the phone with the we had a correspondent in Gaza, and he's telling me, he's like, Amir, like they're bombing us right now. I have it on the phone. I'm like on the laptop. Like, he tell me everything. So I'm like covering everything. Although I hear a loud explosion, and he gets like cut off. And I'm like trying to call him, nothing. Call him, nothing. I'm like, did this man just get killed on the phone with me while I'm talking? This is 2021, so not even 2020, like this year. So it's like all these like things where I feel like as a journalist, I compartmentalize like a lot of emotions when I do. I have like a journalist mode, and people are always so shocked because I even like saw you when we watched like the screening of Ahmed Alive. Like there was like a graphic photo that would come and go like you couldn't see, but I'm just like, okay. And I did an interview with like Motaz Azeza, and he was talking about like how he had to like get his dig up his friends from under the rubble that were dead, and how like it was like a really like intense graphic story. And I was just like sitting there, I was like, okay, so yeah. So then like the, like I just went on to the next question, you know? Whereas like I look around in the room of like the entire like crew and everybody's just like about to cry and like holding themselves, but I have this like weird thing where I compartmentalize and everyone's like, I'm here, are you in therapy? Or do you have any hobbies? Yeah, this or whatever. And I don't know, because it's making me feel like not, I don't know if it's insecure, but it makes me feel like it's like, do I have a problem? Because I'm not like like having like outbursts or I'm not like emotionally.
But do you have an outlet for it? Like for example, with your friend, was there a time where you gave yourself the permission to grieve?
So I published because it was like the first 3 days of like when she was killed, and it was like I had to facilitate like all this like news and stuff like that. And I wrote for Mehdi Hassan Zateo because I had a close connection with like the, you know, her family and her friends, a piece about her character. And it was supposed to serve as like, this is actually Noah's character, because Israeli media was going to like paint her as like a villain to justify her killing her. So that article was supposed to combat that. And I swear I spent so much time. I had to like, I was actually at a conference because I flew to LA to like San Francisco. I was at a conference at this like private lunch, and I had to step out in the balcony, and I'm doing the interview with like her best friend and everybody, and everyone's like crying, and I'm like, okay guys, like let me call back in like an hour and like let's take a breather and I'll resume like this, you know, interview. And I go back to the lunch and everyone's like, oh my God, Amir, so what's going on? Da-da-da-da, whatever. And I'm like, this is a different world where I'm like literally just like talking to like a grieving like family member, and I'm like out here, like I'm like going back and forth. Like everyone's like in this like different like influencer world, and I'm like covering like real like, you know, problems. But I say this because like in terms of like having like an outlet, I don't know. Oh, after I published, sorry, I just forgot my train of thought, but after I published that story and I finished that story, as soon as I hit send on the article to get like published, I like push my laptop like this and I go, and wallahi, for the first time since like doing Muslim, my whole body just like, as soon as I did like the breath, my body just started aches like throughout my body. And I have never felt that pain before. It was just like aches. And I was just like sitting there for like 5 minutes. I was like, like in the moment, like, from when I got the call from like her best friend to like publishing that article, that 3 week day period, and then connecting and calling and doing all this stuff or whatever for like Aisha Noor. It was like, I hit publish. That was the last thing I was gonna do for like the moment. And then just like, I was like, oh. And it was like, whoa. And then a friend of mine at the conference stopped me, and he was like, I was also friends with Aisha Noor. And it was kind of healing because we went off to the side for 2 hours to talk about her and the whole thing. And I was telling him about like, oh, I got the call and all that or whatever, and how I published the story that morning. And then I told him how I was aching because I was like, oh my God, everything. Like, da, da, da. He's like, here, you know, the body keeps the score. Like you're publishing so much traumatic content and news that you don't know this, but your body is like getting hit by it. And I'm like, oh no, because every day I'm covering like traumatic content, you know? So he's like, you got to go take care of yourself. Go to the spa, go get like, you know, a massage or something like that. So I like literally was like, all right, I'm going to go to the spa. So I went to go get a spa. But I don't know, like, that's the thing. Like, I just started therapy like last month. I'm seeing where that goes. But to be honest, like, the crazy thing is like, I'm therapy, I'm telling all of this. Mm-hmm. then I was like, okay, like, I know, like, that is traumatic, but yeah. Let me tell you about this friend that did me wrong, because that's what's on my mind right now.
That's what bothers me.
Yeah, like, I know, like, that's all traumatic, and we got to unpack that, but let me talk about what's on my mind, because I'm pissed. Like, you know, my therapist's like, okay, let's talk about that, because my therapist is, like, trying to, like, be like, hey, we're still in the gauging period, like, okay, like, he's suffering through trauma, but then I'm also like, okay, dismiss that trauma.
He's also petty.
Oh, this was such trauma because this friend did me dirty. I gotta talk about it, let it out. Yeah, so. But yeah, so that's the thing. I just feel like I'm wired differently. And I think it's just because of the nature of the work that I'm doing. Mm. And I have an understanding that it's of a greater purpose. But also, I feel like I have this beautiful connection to Allah that is like very, I don't want to say unique or different. It's just beautiful. And so the first time I went to the Kaaba, when I went to Mecca and I saw it, I was like, wow. Nothing matters. And it's like not like of like, ah, nothing matters. It's more so of like, wow, like everything's insignificant.
It's so trivial, yeah.
This is all insignificant. Like, oh, like so then like the mindset I had after doing Umrah and like going to the Kaaba for the first time was like, oh, this bad thing happened to me, but okay, like it happened. So I adopted this like new way of life after like experiencing Umrah and having this like really in-depth like experience. And I just feel like I just embodied that as like a new like lifestyle and like way of looking at things. I'm like, okay, like that something bad happened and it's just like, okay, like Allah like plans for that to happen and nothing, none of this matters because Allah has a greater plan. So just like adopting that kind of like framework and thing kind of safeguards me mentally. And I think that's also the reason why you have a lot of people like going to Islam to like feel comfort and ease. And I just want to make sure that like my faith is oriented in that type of way of thinking, inshallah.
Wow, that was really good. Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. Okay, so tell me, what else? What has been like a very pivotal moment in your life, would you say?
A pivotal moment? I don't know.
Still waiting for it.
A pivotal moment. I feel like every day is a new pivotal moment. I don't know. Every time I publish a new story, even if it's not like a breaking news story, something like just like more minor. Like I just posted about Puma. To me, like that's pivotal. Like every day, like it's like something could be a small news story. It's still pivotal. Like because it's like because what I realize, alhamdulillah, mashallah, whenever I make a Muslim post, it has this big gravity of like change that comes after it. Like I can make a like, and it scares me at times because of, like, how much power is in a post that, like, I could say, like, tomorrow, like, Burger King supports Israel. And then all of a sudden, it's, like, everybody's, like, no. We're boycotting Burger King. And then it's, like, on the beat, like, and then all of a sudden, it's, like, their sales drop, you know?
Basically, don't become Amir's enemy.
I never misuse, like, my power and stuff like that. But it's, like, it's. That's why it's like the question of like, oh, what's a pivotal moment? It's like, I feel like even if it's like something so small, like me posting a news story that of like Puma, like divesting from Israel is like pivotal in itself because like it'll lead to like someone changing their perspective. Mm. Even if it's one person changing a perspective on like, and then like acting on it, it's pivotal. I don't know. I hope that's an answer. That's good.
That was a lame answer.
Okay, pivotal moment. No, I accidentally canceled Rihanna. And do you not remember this?
No.
Did I not tell you this?
No.
Oh my God, I accidentally canceled Rihanna by accident. And I was known for it for like 2 years. Every news outlet that would cover like Muslim would be like, oh, they're responsible for canceling Rihanna. Like, I was just like, I can't escape this. It's because during her lingerie fashion show for Savage Fenty, she sampled a song that was an Islamic hadith.
Yeah, I remember that.
We broke the news. Who do you think? Like, that's the crazy part about all of this. It's like, astaghfirullah, like, I'm Muslim, but also I'm American, I'm Gen Z, I'm culturally into it. And yeah, I was on social media and I'm seeing her fashion show. And I was like, that sounds like an Arabic song. As right before they're about to introduce Rico Nasty, I was like, is that the Quran? I was like, this sounds like Quran that's sampled. I was like, this can't be the Quran. So then I went and I did research, and on Amazon they had the whole entire playlist, and it was like the playlist of like the songs that were used in the fashion show, and it was in order. So I'm like, okay, like I know that this song was played before, so it has to be this one. So then I played it, and then I googled it, and then I was like, let's see the sample. I was like, this is. like, it has to be something Islamic, like, you know? And then I was doing research, and then I found out it's a hadith. And then I found the exact sample of the hadith, and the hadith was about Judgment Day. And the song was called Doomsday by Coco Chloe. And so I did this investigative journalism of a song that was like, I literally...
You went after Rihanna.
I did it.
What do you mean by accident?
Because I am a Gemini, and also I have ADHD. I just went on a rabbit hole of like, and then I was like, whoa. This is like a news story because I just kept like investigating. I was like too locked in. I was like, okay, let me make a post. So I made a post that was like Rihanna samples Islamic hadith in her lingerie fashion show. And then I did a swipe of like the song and then a swipe of the sampled like Islamic hadith with the translation of like Judgment Day. Oh my God. And that went viral. Then Cosmo and all these magazines.
Yeah.
And then hashtag Rihanna's over parties trending. And the thing was, the cancellation took over her entire fashion show. And everyone was looking forward because it was her first ever like fashion show, yep, I think, for this. Yep. So everyone was hyped for it. But then the cancellation took over it for the next 3 days. That it outshined her entire... It was like a shit show. Oh, my God. But yeah, she like DM'd us apologizing. She made a post apologizing. She was like, I don't play with God. And the thing was, like, it was the first time that I realized, well, like, okay, a post has so much impact on Muslim. Because I didn't tell my followers to go boycott her. I didn't tell my followers to attack her. I didn't tell my followers. They just, like, took the information, made it viral, and then they acted on themselves. Mm-hmm. And then I even, like, said, like, guys, Rihanna apologized. I made a post being like, she apologized. She made an open statement. The comments were so relentless. They were like, we don't care. She's still canceled. I was like, she apologized. And so I felt bad because I was like, I didn't mean to cancel her. It was an accident that it so happened that she got canceled because of a reaction of a news story.
That's
that we
crazy.
Published.
So Rihanna hates you.
No, I mean, she
apologized. I hope she does.
Okay. Well, to be honest,
if it was
Zionist.
you would hate her.
So do I care? No. She didn't talk about Palestine, so I don't care.
True.
That's my litmus test.
Okay. So she deserved that back in the day.
Yeah, you know what? All I'm saying is like...
It was destined.
Allah plans. And we're all on Allah's time.
Right. All in Allah's time. Okay. Yeah. I like how we went from really wholesome to
like deep,
pop
like
culture.
My friend was killed to like Rihanna.
But this is you in a nutshell, by
the
way.
Yeah.
You're always telling me like something really funny and I'm still laughing. I'm still like wiping my tears and then the tears get real and I'm like, oh my God, we got deep. What?
I know, because the nature of my work is deep, but then I also am young. I just turned 26. I like literally started Muslim when I was 21 or 20. No, 21, yeah. And so like from 21 till 26, it's been like the pivotal like 20s have just been every day consumed with Muslim. So I haven't experienced like my 20s, but I still am like young. Like, so like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like I'm growing with Muslim at the same time. Mm. And so it's like a weird thing. But that like my audience is like predominantly Gen Z and young.
Yeah, so they're growing with you.
But they're young because I'm young. So like... The way I cover stories and stuff like that is just like how I perceive and
how
cover
you would
the stories.
Want it, yeah.
Yeah, and so that it like gravitates the audience because it's the person that's doing it. Because people are always like, what's the secret? How do you do it? I'm like, I literally am just covering the stories how I like interact or how I communicate. So
yeah, that's amazing. Wow. Okay, and okay, and in terms of like any stories you want to share with the audience in terms of like, you know, so you were there right for Yusuf's talk, mm-hmm. the first one in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the whole thing where he shared how he was interacting with that white woman online, right? And I thought...
He name dropped me in that one.
He did. You weren't there.
I know.
So you were not there.
No, I came at the end.
He lied. On camera.
The thing is, I hear the story so many times because he uses this story all the time.
Oh, okay. So you've heard the story in a different context. Yes, okay. Yes. But I thought it was so funny that this like white Zionist woman came to him and he entertained it and tried to explain to
him. Yeah, and I was telling him, like, dude, you're crazy.
He wasted his time because he got on a call with her. Yes. It was cracking me up. But anyway.
Yeah, and he was asking me for advice while he was on the phone with her. I'm like, dude, what? Like, I was like, he was like, he's like, yeah, like what? Like if I could change your perspective on a Zionist, I was like, first of all, you're not considering the safety of the people at this event, right?
Yeah.
Like, you, do you have security? Like, do you, like, this person, like, has the intention? If they're so direct about, like, I don't support you, but I want to come to the film.
Mm.
It's like, that's a clear indicator that they're there to cause
commotion. Why are they coming?
Yeah. So.
But for you, because I do agree with Yusuf that, you know, for us, I feel like it's an echo chamber. We all know what's happening. We all know what we want from this situation. But how do we explain it to people who are still on the fence or people who are on the other side? Do you have anything, any story that you've heard or anything you've covered that you think is very powerful?
So to like reach like non-Muslims or people that are aware? I see. Okay.
Or people who are still, you know, they are just a little bit unaware of the situation and not convinced.
I do think that the echo chamber thing is not real, actually. Because I feel like, even like all like Muslims are in unison. We are like we understand like what's happening, but when we continuously share, even though it's like okay, we know we get it, other people are sharing it into their like platforms, and other people have like people that they're connected to, friends that they're connected to that are like being exposed for the first time, like these graphics and information. Like I had this one friend, shout out to Natalie from high school. She's like Peruvian. This girl got exposed to Palestinian content. She's at every Palestinian, like, protest, you know. No attachment to Palestine, not Muslim and stuff like that. But we're seeing this huge wave of people being informed because in their networks, they're following a Muslim or following someone that is posting about Palestinian content on their stories. So, like, you might think, like, oh, I'm posting on my stories. Oh, it feels like an echo chamber because I'm constantly just posting the same thing and, like, nothing is changing or happening. You don't know the people that follow you are like being exposed to this. And it could be someone that could be like from your high school, someone that is like a friend of a friend, a job like colleague or something like that, that is sharing it. And then it's someone is being exposed. And that's why we're seeing a huge shift to the point that the United States wants to ban TikTok because everyone on TikTok is about Palestine. And they're accusing it, TikTok of manipulating algorithm to push Palestinian content. And TikTok is like, whoa, here, look. It's just that everyone just stands on, like, in support of Palestine. Like, we're not doing anything to, like, dictate the algorithm.
I'm going to ask you the questions that you ask other people. So what does being Muslim mean to you?
Oh, it means that you play a crucial role in this temporary life of being a good person, making a lot of people's life and experiences on this world the best that you can by being nice, but also holding accountability because you are you stand on truth, and that's what it means to be Muslim. You have to stand on justice. You have to just constantly like have that as your outwardly identity. It's like a shield, a cloak. When I'm like so proud to say I'm Muslim, and sometimes I get jealous of like hijabis because I'm like, I'd be wearing the kufi, but it doesn't have the same like thing. Like, I want to be loud that I'm Muslim. I'm so proud of being Muslim. I wish I had like a chain or something like that's like loud. I'm like, I am Muslim. Like, because I want people to be like, oh, he's Muslim first above anything else. You know, like I'm Palestinian, but I'm Muslim Palestinian, you know, because there's that something to it where people just have this feeling of like safety, and they should continually have that comfort that like, okay, like this person's Muslim, so like they stand on justice. They're like, you know, a person that is just always, I don't know, sorry, that was a bad answer. I don't know how to finish it, so I just gave up.
Okay. Well, the question that I usually ask, and I think it ties in quite nicely, but let's see what you say. I always ask people, who is Amir without,
God, just kill me,
without your education, without your profession, and without your ethnicity. So don't talk to me about being Palestinian, a journalist, or Muslim.
Amir is an adaptable, versatile individual that loves humanity. Like, I feel like one thing that I love about myself that I've been so reflective of is, like, I love traveling, I love exploring, I love new experiences, but most importantly, like, put me anywhere in the world and I'll know how to like work myself. I want to communicate with people. I'm very curious. I'm a curious person. I want to know like how this culture like lives, how this lifestyle is different, how I can like learn and be a part of it and interact. And I'll let you know how my mom, she passed away last year, and she always said, Amir, I could drop you in the middle of a forest, in the middle of nowhere, you'll come back with, like, being friends with, like, mountain lions. You'll, like, have, like, you'll be fed. We don't got to worry about you. You'll come back, like, a month later and be like, what? Like,
that's the Gemini as well, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we're both Gemini, right?
Yeah.
That's what
I'm June, you're May. June 3rd.
Still. We're still Gemini. So we can make friends with anyone.
I don't get the slander.
Yeah, why are we slandered?
I don't know. They say that we're not loyal, but my Taurus is in Venus. So that's loyalty. Okay. I love my birthday because it's like 6 and 3. And I feel like I never met anyone with the same birthday as me.
6 and 3?
Yeah.
Is that rare?
I don't know, but I feel like it's rare because I haven't met anyone with the same birthday as me. I just like it's like 6 and then like divide that by 2 is 3. But maybe I just am ADHD. Sorry.
He did some maths on the podcast.
I was born in 1998. Can't believe that. Yeah. Let that sink in. But I'm mentally 33.
I don't know why you keep saying that, because you're not your Janna age yet. Please.
I want to be.
You're not there yet.
I feel like I'm mentally my Janna age. Inshallah.
The amount of people you fight, I don't think you're there yet.
It's because I hold people accountable. They're mad at me.
So, okay, one thing that the little amount of time we've spent together. But for example, when someone tried to like crash your photo and you were like, no. And this was just a person being like, oh, can I be part of the picture? You said no. No explanation. Nothing. And then...
Setting boundaries.
You are very good at setting boundaries.
But I didn't know who he was. Why are you going to crash my photo? I want to take a photo of him.
But if it was me, I would have been like, oh, yeah, okay. And then I will take one without him as well.
Yeah,
you
know? No,
but for
I'm
you,
not.
You're like, no. And it's not even like, oh,
I'm
no.
very direct.
But yeah, how do people... Because you know that's one thing our generation struggles with.
Yeah.
Setting boundaries.
I see.
Me too. So how do we do it better?
I don't know. I really don't know how I became this way. Because people always...
you've always been like this?
You know, I have a reputation in the US that everyone is intimidated by me. Like in the Muslim sphere and the influencer sphere, the creator
really?
Sphere. Yeah, and I always get like annoyed by that because then they meet me like, oh my God, you're actually so chill, you're so cool. But it's because like people are always like, oh my God, Amir's like intimidating. And I think it's because like I'm trying to figure out why people think I'm intimidating, but I think it's because I'm just not like, they don't see like my true side.
Mm.
And because they don't see my true side, they're like, oh my God, he's like very direct, he's very da-da-da. Because when I'm in work mode, I'm like, no, that can't be possible. No, we can't publish this, da-da-da-da-da-da. Or, like, we're on set or for something. And I'm like, okay, this has to be, no, da-da-da-da. You know, I'm not trying to be perfectionist, but it's like there's a certain way about going things that, like, needs to be done. So it intimidates people. And the thing is, like, none of these people ever come to me to talk to me if they have, like, feedback or they're intimidated or they feel some type of way. They go to, like, friends of mine. And then the friends report back to me. So this person's da-da-da-da-da. And I'm just like, dang, like, I can't believe I have to have, like, a degree of separation.
They can't even report back.
Yeah.
But you know what they say, right? It's only your problem if they tell you. If they don't tell you, that's their problem.
Facts. I know. I don't care. I don't think about them. But also, it's like a Turkish proverb that, like, you are your namesake. And I feel like my name's Amir. It means prince. So I feel like I have this, like... People really say this about me. They're like, you embody this, like, leader type of, like, aura that, like, people are just intimidated because you were just like, oh. Like, and I really do think, like, I'm very, like, direct and blunt. So, I mean, it's just my nature. I'm not, like, I didn't learn it. I just say it how it is.
He does think he's a prince. Like, earlier when you refused to drag my luggage for me.
I'm the youngest in my family, so I'm spoiled. I don't want to get unspoiled.
Which is why it's funny that both of us, that's why we have so many fights, because we're both the youngest in our family. We're both Gemini.
But you see how, like, you and I, we only know each other for, like, 2-3 days. And, like,
but we get along.
We feel like we've known each other for a lifetime. But yeah. I feel like I have that, like, that's who Amir is. I love connecting with people and then just, like, exploring.
If it's click, it's yeah. click, right? Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah. I have, like, a rule book in my mind of, like, Amir's rules of communication. And it's like, never speak to someone that has your back face to you. Never speak to someone that interrupts. Like, always be the first one to leave. Like, I have, like, these, like, I just have these like rules that I live by communication wise. And so, like, you bringing up, like, the guy with the photo,
yeah.
I was like, he interrupted, like, a,
he did.
I was having a passionate conversation with Yusuf, and he interrupted, and then now he wanted a photo. So,
you're like, no.
And then I'm being framed as the guy that is, like, blunt and rude. Like, so, like, it's like, no. Like,
Yeah, he interrupted. Yeah. He went against the rule.
Yeah. So. I have really hard icks, which is, like, and, like, once I get, like, a hard ick, it's like...
Same. For me, it's the same.
Yeah.
If you do one thing that bothers me always against the rule book, as you say, it's really hard for me to come back.
Yeah. And it's not me being, like, pretentious or anything like that. It's kind of a way to safeguard myself of, like, people who have good intentions.
Yeah. You know? It's based on past experiences as well, right?
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Because also, like, one thing is, like, never wait for someone to speak to them. It's also, like, a big thing that I live by. Like, if you have to, like, wait for someone to, like, speak with them, it's, like, they're kind of not, like, showing you that respect. You know, it's different if it's, like, if there's, like, talking to someone or whatever and stuff like that, but it's,
what
like,
do you mean by that? I was going to say, wait, what if they're talking to someone else? I don't want to interrupt.
No, oh, mashallah. I'm not used to this. I'm in America.
True.
Alhamdulillah.
Yeah.
You're in Dubai, you hear this?
I'm used to it.
Alhamdulillah.
Yeah.
Oof. Okay, Dubai hasn't changed yet. Alhamdulillah. You're like, editor, cut that out.
Please tell me, carry on. What were you saying?
I forgot, but yeah, it's just my nature.
No, but it was something good.
I forgot. Sorry, that van was a, keep that in. That was a big surprise.
Oh, he lost his train of thought.
Yeah,
it's time for us to go pray. So, any parting message?
Well, thank you so much for having me.
To the audience.
Oh, okay. The thing is, people always ask me, like, oh, I want to do something. I want to, like, create my own platform. I want to do da-da-da. It's just start. But the number one thing is consistency. And that's actually one thing that I really valued and appreciate that you said in your workshop, when you gave that workshop about, like, podcasting. When you said consistency, I was like, thank you. Because ever since I launched Muslim February 15, 2019, I told myself, I disciplined myself. I was like, this is something that I'm taking serious. I'm not missing a post a day. So I'm posting every single day. And since February 15, 2019, I have never missed a post on Muslim.
See?
Even if it's a traumatic moment in my life. If my mom passed away, I posted that the day my mom passed away. Like, because that's just how attached I am to the greater mission. Where I'm like, this is my life's calling. This is my passion. Like, I am doing this role for the sake of Allah, for the sake of this, like, you know, world. So if you're really passionate about something, if you're passionate about a community, you're passionate about a project, about, like, something... You have to be really passionate about it, that you're consistent, because your consistency shows. And I saw this one. Do you know Charlamagne?
Mm-hmm.
So on his podcast, they're talking about Azealia Banks. You know Azealia Banks, this rapper? She's like, Azealia Banks is always like talking about, like, oh, like my music, da 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 da, whatever. And she's like coming after people. And Charlamagne is like, look, just go back to the studio. And I know it's like so, it's like, you know, it's about like music and artistry, but I was like, that's so. True.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not seeing success because you're not at the studio.
Yeah.
You're doing everything else besides going to the studio. So
just
it's like,
do the work.
So yeah, do the damn work. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to sound like Kim Kardashian. No one wants to work anymore. But I'm just saying, like if you're about it, be about it. Don't just be like, oh, I'm about it. And then just not do anything to, like, bring that vision to life, you know? Start communicating with people. Get advice. Go attend a class, a workshop. If you don't know graphic design, sign up for a master class. If you don't know podcasting, sign up for a podcasting master class. Like, pick up that skill. It's not going to come to you. Just because you're like, oh, I want to start something. It's like, this is going to be great for like X, Y, and Z community. It's not going to come to you. You have to put the work in. You have to put the initiative. You have to put the consistency in. Because when I started Muslim, if you go back to the very first post, the graphics were ugly.
Of course.
It was ugly, but it worked at the time. And then throughout the time, you're growing with your project. So also, you can't be a perfectionist if you're trying to start a project or initiative.
You improve as you go.
Yeah. And that's why I loved what you were saying, because you were hitting all the points. I was like, yep, she gets it.
Yeah, because I think the main thing that holds people back is perfectionism, right? You're like, oh, but I need the perfect time. I need to be very good at it. But no, you just need... As imperfect as
I need the best equipment. I need this, da 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 da. It's like, no, you know. I was working off of a 2013 MacBook Pro that was like glitching and the screen was like, I gotta go like this. Also, I was using an iPhone 16, like, since I started Muslim all the way until I graduated college. So, like, literally, like, for the first 3 years of like launching, like working on Muslim, I was working off this like broken iPhone 16 that was cracked and like da 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 da. Until it finally just gave out, and I was like, I need to buy a new phone.
See, it's never about the extra faff around. Yeah. They are excuses.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Oh my God, when I'm going to see you next, I'm never going to go, I'm not going to come to that region. So I guess like...
Japan?
Yes, let's see Japan.
We'll make Japan happen, yeah? We're going to do a little project in Japan. Let's do it.
Inshallah. I have all the best recs. But also, you've been to Japan, so we're going to have so much fun together.
We will. All right, Inshallah. Amazing.